QUT acknowledges that Turrbal and Yugara as the First Nations owners of the lands where QUT now stands. We pay respects to their elders, laws, customs and creation spirits. We recognise that these lands have always been places of teaching, research and learning. QUT acknowledges the important role Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people play within the QUT community. And here at How To Academia, we also acknowledge that these lands have never been ceded.
Welcome to How To Academia. Leaving high school and joining the world of uni can be a weird and difficult time. On this podcast, we talk to our friends, students, and academics to find out how they went about the process of developing professional skills, dealing with challenges, and generally navigating the gooey mess of being a human in the academic world. Our guest this episode is Monique Buckley. Monique is a psychology and justice graduate from QUT. She currently works at KPMG, working in the National Security and Justice Practice. I'll let her discuss what that means in more depth in the interview. In this episode, Jodi and Monique discuss a range of topics, including what it's like to work in justice-related areas, especially community corrections where Monique has experience, and tips for recent justice graduates hoping to work in the field. Without any further ado, Monique Buckley.
Welcome to How To Academia. Who the heck are you?
Big question, and I love that it's the beginning of every podcast. So my name is Monique Buckley. Professionally, I am a manager over at KPMG, which is a consulting firm, and I work in the National Security and Justice Practice. So what that actually means is I work with clients across the justice sector, so national security, emergency management, courts, police, and corrections to solve some really big issues. And prior to that, I was working in community corrections and the Parole Board of Queensland for quite a number of years.
And what has brought you here today is that you are a justice graduate. Tell me about your time at university.
Yeah, so reflecting back, I can't believe it's been 7 years since I was graduating from QUT with my psychology and justice undergrad. I didn't think I would land where I did land. So I got out, I finished my undergraduate degrees thinking it would be a lot easier to land a full-time job than it was. I thought that I would be doing something in the realm of psychology, was interested in the justice space, but thought that ultimately I'd end up as a forensic psychologist. Wasn't prepared to do the study to become a forensic psychologist. So I explored other avenues and I, you know, looked at youth justice, child safety, police, eventually ended up in community corrections in the Brisbane North office. And I did that for about 5 years before moving on to Parole Board Queensland.
When you decided to study psychology and justice, what was your motivation?
I was fascinated and interested in why people commit crime, why people do the things that they do. I think I have a very colourful upbringing, so I understand that it's more than just people ultimately and actively deciding to do the wrong thing. I think there's so many systematic factors at play, and I think there's just so many elements, particularly in regards to disadvantage, that bring people to do the things that they end up doing. And I wanted to be a part of helping people to get out of those situations.
Was the degree what you thought it would be?
It was interesting. It was a really interesting degree. I really loved the opportunities that I got in terms of doing some practical work. So I did some practical work for youth justice, got to go out into the youth detention centre over at Wacol, and that experience really shaped my ideas around what I wanted for my career. I worked out what I did and what I didn't want. So I thought working in the youth justice field was a particular area of interest for me, but I found it exceptionally confronting. And so I decided then that I wanted to work in the adult space.
What made you think the adult space would be different?
I think for me, working with children, I found it harder to decompartmentalize what I was doing and help them and support them without becoming over invested to the point where it impacted my health and well-being. I thought that it would be something that I could do working with adults. However, that's not my experience.
Yeah, so I really want to talk to you about your experience towards the tail end of community corrections, but let's start with, you're a new graduate, you've just got this job, you rock up on your first day. How are you feeling?
Nervous, did not know what to expect whatsoever. Going in, I had this stereotypical idea of what I thought a probation and parole officer looked like and felt like, and I felt very removed from that stereotype. In my head, it was, you know, very alike to a prison guard. I do not look and feel like a prison guard. So I didn't know what to expect, and I thought at the beginning I would be on the outer. Walking in though, I was surrounded by people who were very similar in age, who had studied the same things that I'd studied. It's a predominantly female environment, community corrections. So I did fit into the worker environment. I wasn't expecting the stress straight away. So I remember second day in, I inherited a caseload of about 100 people.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of people to be responsible for. So I think it was definitely different to what I was expecting. It was interesting. It was engaging. I had the opportunity to support people and to work directly with people, particularly people, you know, developing people and helping them to achieve their goals that ultimately reduce their risk of reoffending. That was all very personally satisfying.
I'm interested in, it's a big deal to walk into somebody's life or have someone as a probation parole officer intrude in their world and go, this is how we need to work to prevent reoffending. Did you feel equipped for that?
I don't think I knew what I was getting myself into. My first week in was very eye-opening in that respect, because I had thought that I would engage with somebody who wanted to engage with me. And that was not always the case. Mm. That was the case in some situations, but it wasn't always the case.
How do you deal with that?
Building rapport and showing empathy. I think, as I alluded to at the beginning, I do come from a bit of a colourful background. So I am able to empathise with people in a way that I don't think that everybody can. And so I've got that little tool under my tool belt.
Yeah.
But I think experience helps that as well.
Yeah.
I think the ability to see someone sitting in front of you as a human being is so important for any of these type of roles. To see somebody as a person above and beyond the things that they've done is how you develop a rapport and relationship with the person in front of you.
It's so important, because one of the limitations of the systems that we have is that the reason you're in their life is because of their offending behavior, but that offending behavior is not all of their life by any stretch of the imagination. It seems to me that people often have the perception that if you show empathy or kindness towards someone in that particular role, then you would be taken advantage of.
Mm.
What's your experience of that?
I think it is easy to get it into that mindset. I think it's easy to become very cynical, guarded. I went through that. I experienced that. I think within the first few months of managing a caseload, there are people who will manipulate you. And it's not a personal reflection of you. It's a behavior that they have demonstrated for a very long period of time. You are just another person in their life. I think for me, what I came to realize on that point as well is that you are not, in most cases, the first person of authority in their life. Mm. and you represent authority. So some people are very on the back foot with that straight away. You have to work at breaking down those barriers, and how you do that is through different means. It's more than just building rapport and showing that you understand someone. Whilst those things are important and they're important skills to have, you actually have to invest into that person and help them to achieve their goals and show them that in order to develop trust.
That seems kind of overwhelming.
It is overwhelming because you are wearing dual hats in community corrections as well, right? So you are in one respect helping them to achieve goals because you are looking at the factors that led them to offending in the first place, and you want to help them to essentially achieve behavioral change so they're not in those situations again. But on the flip side, you're also responsible for compliance.
Yeah.
So if something goes wrong there, or somebody's not complying, or something does happen, you have to put on that other hat and go down the road of contravention action. That element, that circumstance of dual roles and dual responsibilities and dual hats is something that I found particularly challenging.
Does the organisation help you deal with that at all?
Yep, and they offer a range of support mechanisms and programs to support you through your well-being as well when you are struggling to carry out the dual responsibilities, or you are struggling in general with workload and work-life balance. But I think being so young, putting my hand up and saying, I am in a challenging situation, I am probably not where I want to be with my health and well-being right now, was something that I wasn't willing to do so young.
Yeah, why?
At the time, honestly, I think I saw it as a sign of weakness. I'm a high performer.
Yeah.
To be blunt.
You really are.
And I don't want to be seen as anything but high performing. For me, that was a sign of weakness, a sign of you're not performing, or a sign of, you know, what is wrong with you that you can't just do your job and be okay. I've come a long way since then,
yeah.
And I think that's an element of maturing. I think it's an element of talking to people and understanding not everybody has everything together, but at the time it wasn't something I was recognizing.
What process did you go through to come to the point of seeing things differently? You're overwhelmed, you're feeling as if you're not coping and you don't want to stick your hand up, but now you have a different view of that. What was that transition?
So I had to go through a long process of getting there. So I think if we go back a few steps, when I started my career with community corrections, I was high performing, I was really effective, I was able to wear that dual response, those dual hats, and show that dual responsibility and work my way through community corrections. There did come a time where I was investing so much in the people that I was working with that I was going through their highs and through their lows with them. So it was very much, you know, somebody came in and they landed their first job, or they were able to get off drugs, and you feel so elated by that. But when things go wrong, or there's a relapse, or they can't access the support and the help that they need, you're going through those lows with them as well. I didn't recognize at the time I was doing that until I had family point out to me the difference in my mood and the difference in my behavior and the difference in my approach. And I started slowly listening to the people around me to actually identify, oh no, this isn't me.
Yeah.
And there is an element of cynicism and there is an element of apathy, because I got to the point where I was investing so much, and when things would go wrong, I thought, well, I shouldn't be investing this much anymore. You know, what's the point? No one's going to change. What am I doing? And I had to hit that, and I had to have people bring me up and you know, really identify that there was a change in my mood and my behavior, to then transition and understand and take a step back and think, okay, well, this is not where I want to be, so what do I need to do to get myself out of here?
What did you need to do to get yourself out of there?
It was ultimately about taking a step back and redefining my career purpose. So my why. Yeah. I know it's such a cliche, but it's true. I think you have to define your why. And so my why has always been around encouraging and supporting people who don't have a voice to have a voice. So if that's through navigating the justice system or navigating the human services system, that is my why. How I do it and how I get there is different to how I thought it should be. So at the beginning, I thought that I would achieve that why through intervening at an individual level. I recognize that I have my own limitations and I do become very invested at an individual level to the detriment of my own health and well-being. So I had to take a step back and go, well, how else will I achieve that why? And for me, it was system-wide change.
Yeah.
So I explored ways and avenues that I could achieve system-wide change and therefore still support these vulnerable populations.
It's so important because I think a lot of us think we're going to go in there, I'm going to work with people, and we're going to make changes. And I'm like, it's the same when I worked in child protection, right? You go in there and you're on a one-on-one level, and there is all of those profound challenges that you've spoken about. And for some of us, that's just not where we flourish. Mm-hmm. And other people won't flourish unless you're flourishing. So figuring out that alternative of how you meet your whys, and that it, I think for me, it's like, it doesn't actually make me a lesser person that I don't work in that one-on-one client space. It doesn't make my value any less as a justice professional. It's just a different space.
It's a different space, and you have to play to your strengths at the end of the day. I look at people who I know who are still in community corrections, and they're doing amazing things, and they are amazing practitioners at that individual level. And I was, but for me personally, what is good for me and for the people that I'm working with is to take that step back and look at it from a system-wide level. That way I'm not putting myself in the same space that I was.
In community corrections, there seems to be this challenge between having a workforce that is largely young women working with a predominantly male client base, because most men still form up most of our corrections interventions. How did you see that playing out?
Yeah, I remember thinking, how on earth will I sit in front of somebody who's been in the custodial system for the last 40 years as a 24-year-old female and encourage them to change their behavior? That's a big ask. It really is. I got myself there because that was my job, that was my role, that was something I was invested in doing, but it is a big task.
What skill set did you bring to reconciling those differences?
I think you have to be transparent. I think you have to be clear. I think you have to recognize the elephant in the room. I don't think you can ever sit in front of somebody, particularly in a situation like that, and say, I understand exactly where you're coming from. Because in the end of the day, I didn't. So it was about recognizing my experience was different from their experience, but I still had value to add. I was still able to provide support to this person.
And sometimes it's just a small shift between that I understand what you're going through and that sounds like it's really difficult. And just that little tweak in language can make the biggest difference to getting someone to engage.
Definitely.
With you, I think.
And appreciating their circumstances. Whilst you might not understand it or have experienced it, a lot of people will relate to you just appreciating where they're coming from.
So you are now in a bit of a different space than what we would expect for a justice graduate. Tell me about that.
Yes, so I'm over in a consulting firm with KPMG, and to be perfectly honest, I wouldn't have been able to tell you what KPMG was about 3 to 4 years ago. It is, for me, it was completely left field, but it made sense.
Mm.
So when I took that step back from community corrections and really reevaluated what I was doing, I spoke to somebody at the time who was working for the firm, and he let me know that they actually played a role in justice and security. And I thought, well, that sounds really interesting and fascinating. I'll go back to uni and I'll study business, because they surely won't look at any of my experience and think that, you know, you belong here. So I went back to uni. I started a Master of Business. I had an opportunity to go over to KPMG as a vacationer. I started a vacationer program surrounded by people who were at the end of their undergraduate degrees, and I was pulled aside pretty quickly and asked, what are you doing in a vacationer program? To which my response was, well, you know, I'd been in community corrections and I'd studied justice, so surely I need to do another degree in order to secure a job here. And was quickly told, no, that is not the case at all. And the experience that I had working in community corrections, but also having a justice degree, was really valuable to the work that they were doing. So I was able to secure a job pretty quickly with KPMG. And now I'm working with clients at that system level to make change and improve the way that the justice system works, not only for those who are involved in the system, but for those working in the system too.
Can you explain to us what that looks like? Because I can't quite conceptualize the role of a company like KPMG in figuring out those systemic changes.
So at a basic level, those clients will come to market with a complex issue, and we will then work with them to support them through that complex issue. Usually it's around increasing efficiency and effectiveness of service and their operating in their business model so that they can produce more effective outcomes for, like I said, the clients of the justice system and for their workers as well.
So what skill sets did you take from your degree to do this?
In terms of consulting, I took my understanding of how the system all comes together. So being quite clear around how someone moves through the system, being able to speak the language, being able to understand and appreciate the role of courts, the role of police, the role of corrections, and how it all comes together to shape somebody's engagement with the system as a whole.
That doesn't seem very much like what justice students would be thinking of going into a degree. Can you tell me about, I guess, the difference between working in the public and the private sector?
There is a notable difference between working in the public and private sector. For me, what I've really gotten out of the private sector and what I've really valued is the pace at which decision making is made, the progression opportunities, the support and focus on work-life balance.
Do you have any tips for students thinking, oh, maybe I don't have to go into the public sector, maybe I can go into the private sector? How can they better equip themselves for that?
I think it's about talking to people. That is one of the main things I would encourage. I would encourage anybody to really make an attempt to understand holistically what your opportunities are. Because you might be really well suited to working in the public sector. You might be really well suited to working in the private sector. At the end of the day, I can tell you that you can flip from one side to another, and that is completely okay too, because the experiences that you develop in one area do not offset, or they're not negated when you try to go into the other area.
How do we even know about what's going on in the private sector? Like, if you didn't think, oh, maybe a consultancy firm's for me, how can we better equip students to be thinking through that?
It's a tough question, because there's not a lot of stuff. there's not a lot of stuff. There isn't a lot of information out there, and I can appreciate that. I remember finishing my degree and I had a little bit more support from the university to actually secure a job. I went into a post-grad program that supported graduates from the justice degree to secure work. But at the time, my knowledge around opportunities was so limited. So that's why I just encourage grads to have discussions with people, jump on LinkedIn, hit people up through LinkedIn. At the end of the day, the worst case scenario is they don't respond to you. But a lot of people do want to invest in people that are reaching out. They do want to invest in talent. They do want to invest in the next generation of workers. So I think it is really worth reaching out to people and having those conversations, because the more conversations you have, the more of an understanding you have around your potential opportunities.
Where to from here for you?
It's a good question. I don't know, Jody. Just taking it one step at a time.
I mean, I think that's fine. Like, on some level, aren't we all? Do you have like a, at the end of your career, and you're young and you're like kicking goals and you're doing great, at the end of your career, when you think back, what do you want to be able to say you achieved?
I guess it really comes back to my why. I want to know that I have done everything in my power to open up the doors and create opportunities for this system to better work. Because I've seen the failings of the system. I've seen the challenges. I've seen people who are crying out for access to services and for access to support face barrier upon barrier upon barrier. If I can create some sort of change that eliminates those barriers and opens those doors and tears down those walls, then I will be satisfied.
That, how do you maintain that sense of direction and passion?
It is about continuously stepping back, because it is so easy to be caught up in what you're doing in work every day and not take that step back and that reflection and really understand how you contribute to the bigger picture. I think it's really important to continue to do that throughout your career.
Who do you admire in terms of, I guess, looking at justice professionals, people who you think do things well, who do you admire?
I admire the people that I've worked with. You know, I look at them for inspiration. I look at them for behaviours and attitudes that I want to adopt. Because the people that I've always surrounded myself with professionally are people that are passionate about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. What would be your tips to graduates looking to go into community corrections?
My tips would revolve around making sure that you have clear boundaries so that you don't become so over-invested to the detriment of your own health and well-being. My tips for anybody, including graduates that go into community corrections, but any workplace in general, is to really prioritize your health and well-being. Prioritize your work-life balance. Have non-negotiables. My non-negotiable is going to a dance class once a week, or my non-negotiable is going to the gym every morning. Have non-negotiables that you understand are good for your mental health and are good for your physical health, and make sure that you are clear about them and you stick to them.
That professional life is only part of who you are, and it's a big part of who you are, but you're right, you have to have those non-negotiables that define you outside of that space. That's excellent tips. What do you think has been your biggest lesson figuring out how to be a justice professional?
How I can make change, but make change in a way that suits me.
That is such a big, important lesson. So now I'm going to ask you potentially the most challenging question of our entire chat, and that is, did you have a favourite subject as an undergrad?
Oh, Jody. Just all of yours?
Well, that's very sweet, but...
I really enjoyed the experience that I got to do some prac work.
Yeah.
Because for me, like I said at the beginning, I was able to quickly work out what I wanted and what I didn't want.
What were your tips be to students thinking about taking on prac work?
I would say to go for it. I don't think, reflecting back, there was any particular area that you wouldn't have benefited from doing prac. I don't think, even if you secured an opportunity that might not necessarily be your first choice, it's still an opportunity and you might love it. And when do you actually get that opportunity in life? You don't. You don't get to try before you buy all the time. So, yeah, run with it.
I also think that, like, you might not love it, but also you might just learn some of those things that will be really important to be able to take into a job interview and say, I had this experience. It was really challenging. This is how I dealt with it. This is what I learned, and that taking that opportunity while you have the space to do it.
Exactly. There's no negative that I could see coming from that experience.
I 100% agree. I think that is one of the most important things as an undergraduate. Speaking of undergraduates, top tips for students in surviving a university experience?
Oh gosh, this is where it pays to do as I say, not say as I do. Do not procrastinate, as I did many times throughout my university degree. Engage, 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 engage. I wish that I had engaged more. I wish that I had attended more of my lecture. I know at the time there was an opportunity to attend lectures virtually or in person. I wish I had attended more in person and just had those incidental conversations with the lecturers and with the people around me, because those conversations open up experiences and opportunities that you just don't get.
It's such a challenge to me, and it's something that we really grapple with students not attending in person because of that very side-by-side interpersonal experience that you get. And I get this, that you can't always attend, but like, I look at it and go, what a missed opportunity to not be there in person as well. And also, like, there's so many stories of people who have succeeded in life with someone who they sat next to in university.
Yeah, well, it's the first crack you have at developing your professional network.
100%, and those relationships can be really important. Did you have a favourite theorist?
Oh, yes. I do like a few of them, but one that stood out to me throughout my career and one that I continuously reflected on was labelling theory.
Ooh, tell me more.
I think being in community corrections, the public perception of what you're doing is sometimes misaligned to the value that you think and the value that you're actually contributing. And I think it's so easy to throw around labels like criminal, and I can tell you some really out of touch conversations I've had with some people who did not see the value of community corrections and thought, you know, these people should be locked up, throw away the key, ship them off to an island. But if you go in with those sort of preconceived notions and ideas and you label people and you push them down, how can you ever expect them to change?
It's fundamentally one of the biggest problems I think that we face in criminal justice is we expect people to change in systems where, with the barriers in place, it is impossible. And it's impossible to come back from that label with the challenges that are in place.
And you can see that when you work with people, that they really internalize the label that they've been given by society. And that is a really tough thing to crack.
Do you have any tips on how to do that? How do we crack that?
We have to change our language as a starting point. But bigger than that, we have to change our systems. And that's what I keep coming back to, is how do we then create system-wide change that allows people to flourish, that allows people to get access to the support that they require.
So if I was to give you my magic wand for a day and my incredible capacity of influence, what is the number one thing that you would change in the way that we currently do criminal justice?
Good question. I think more recently what we have been achieving and working towards is that integrated system approach. And I think that's what we need. I think we can't be seen in isolation. We can't go, well, somebody's in court now, or somebody's in prison now. These systems and these agencies have to integrate and see the person as a holistic person. And how does health come into play? How does education come into play? How does mental health come into play? How do all of these systems integrate to improve someone's overall prospects and to reduce their ongoing contact with the criminal justice system?
I'm going to ask you, fundamentally, why should we care?
Because people are people. To not care is to not be human, in my opinion. I think we have to care because we have to want the best for people. We have to want the best for the community. We have to want the best for each other.
I think that wanting the best is so important, but so often our concept of what the best is the root of the problem, because some people think the best is we need to integrate services, and some people think the best is just throw away the key. Ultimately, the goal is the same, crime reduction. I'm on board with you 100% that I actually think the way to get to crime reduction is by caring and by integrating services and by treating people as people and making a difference in individual lives.
Early intervention. That early intervention leads to prevention. That's where we should be coming from, not at the other end.
100%. What do you want to say to justice students?
Don't underestimate the skill set that you've developed through doing a justice degree, number one. Underline that one. Number two, take any sort of opportunities that you can get, whether that is striking up a conversation through LinkedIn, or whether that is undertaking prac work at university, any opportunity that you can get to holistically understand your career prospects is so important when you are at university, because you're in a safe to fail environment. Why not? And number three, go into any sort of career prioritizing yourself.
Those are excellent things and a really beautiful little summary. Monique, I'm so proud of you. I think you are a justice graduate that really enshrines what we want from our justice graduates. You care and you're compassionate and you're thoughtful and you're kicking goals, and I'm really happy to have had this chance to catch up with you and reflect again.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome.
This podcast was hosted and produced by the excellent Dr. Jodie Deeth. Editing by Kelsey Adams, that's me. Music by Poddington Bear. And this podcast was developed with support from the Queensland University of Technology. Thank you for listening.